Good evening, everyone. I would like to welcome everyone and call the Reedy City Council meeting to order for Tuesday, July 25th, 2017. And invocation will be by Ken Baker, Police Department Chaplain, and the Pledge of Allegiance will be by Frank Pignon, Councilman Pignon, please. Will you please stand?
Good evening. Be reading this evening out of Psalm 67. It says, God be merciful unto us and bless us and cause his face to shine upon us, Selah, that thy way may be known upon the earth, thy saving health among all the nations. Let the people praise thee, O God, and let all the people praise thee. O let the nations be glad and sing for joy, for thou shalt judge the people righteously and govern the nations upon the earth, Selah. Let the people praise thee, O God, let the people praise thee. Then shall the earth yield her increase, and God, even our own God, shall bless us. God shall bless us, and all the ends of the earth shall fear him. Heavenly Father, I just thank you for this evening, Lord God. God, and I pray tonight, Lord God, first of all, according with your scripture, I pray, God, for your mercy, Lord God, that you would just have your mercy upon us and the leaders of this community, Lord God, guiding us, leading us, Lord God, showing us your way, Lord God, because I believe that everyone that is in this room tonight, Lord God, wants to do your will and establish your will and your kingdom upon this earth. And so, Lord, I pray for that blessing, that mercy, and that direction and guidance from you. And, Lord, I pray for blessings. Lord, I pray that you would bless our leaders, that you would bless this meeting tonight, bless the agenda and the direction that you have for us. And, Lord, I just pray your blessings over this. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you, Ken. Please join me in flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have the roll call, please.
Councilmember Beck.
Here.
Councilmember Fast.
Here.
Councilmember Pignon.
Yes.
Councilmember Salino.
Here.
Mayor Bettencourt.
Yes. Agenda approval. Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda?
There is one amendment we would ask for, Mayor, and that is to swap items 21 and 22. We'd like to do the staff reports prior to the closed session, and so if the council is so inclined, if we could have a motion and a second to do that.
Motion to approve.
Second. Go ahead.
Councilmember Beck.
Yes.
Councilmember Salino.
Here.
Councilmember Fast.
Yes.
Councilmember Pignon.
Yes.
Mayor Bettencourt.
Yes. We have a presentation tonight. It's an introduction of our new code enforcement officer, Gavino Barella.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council, Jerry Isaac, Fire Chief. It's my pleasure tonight to introduce Gavino Barrera as the city's latest and newest life safety code enforcement officer. Gavino comes to us with experience from the cities of Avenal and Hanford with a combined total of over 15 years of experience. Prior to that, he worked for Arizona State Department of Corrections for about 6 years, so Gavino has a good understanding of the law. He's got a good understanding of the codes. And he's got a good understanding of people, which is very important in this position. So I think he's a great fit for the city of Reedley, and we wish him well. And I know he's going to do good things. With him tonight is his family, his wife Liz, and their son Omar. And they reside in Sanger. So I'll turn it over to Gavino to say a couple of words.
Good evening. Hello to all members of the council, mayor, and the city manager. Just like to thank you for obliging me to be part of the City of Reedley team. Looking forward to it. It's been a very welcoming 2 weeks on the staff that I have met, and I'm sure there's many more staff to meet, but 2 weeks and I feel at home already, and it just feels great. So thank you for the opportunity. I look forward to serving the City of Reedley and attempting to make a difference for you all. Thank you very much. Appreciate
thank
that.
You. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome. You're welcome.
And I might just add that at the City of Hanford, Gavino was using the same programs that we use here in Reedley for generating code enforcement cases and tracking and that kind of thing. So He basically was able to walk in the door and start working without having to do any additional training. So he hit the ground running, so to speak.
All right.
Thank you.
You look good in that uniform, by the
way. I appreciate that. Have a good evening. Thank you.
Public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the City Council on items of interest to the public within the Council's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is a policy of the Council not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the City Manager's office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are not on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the council as each item is brought up for discussion. Are there any comments from the public? Hearing none, we'll move on to the agenda items. Consent agenda items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as one item. Under a consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any council member may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss or change the recommended course of action, and the council can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motions in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoption of ordinances, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent items. Is there any items that the council or public wishes to remove?
I'd like to remove items 6, 12, and 13, please.
Do I have a motion for the remaining items?
Motion.
Second.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Pinon?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Mayor Bettencourt?
Yes. Number 6, approve and authorize City Manager to execute a services agreement with Express Employment Professionals for the purpose of recruiting and filling a vacant senior maintenance worker position.
Yeah, good evening, Council. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have regarding this item.
I just had a question or just a clarification. Has this been reviewed by the labor unions?
It has. I did meet with Local 39 to get their blessing on this agreement, just because it is out of our normal recruiting method, and they did agree to this one time, kind of on a trial basis.
And the reason why we're doing this?
Yeah, we essentially have exhausted all of our traditional efforts in trying to recruit for this position. We did have, between some retirements at the end of this last year, we've had a difficult time replacing the level 2 and 3 maintenance workers that require a little more qualifications in asphalt and concrete construction work. So we've had a very difficult time in getting qualified candidates for those positions.
Thank you, Russ.
Thanks.
Russ, was Mr. Gertson the one that handled all the heavy equipment?
Mr. Gertson was a senior maintenance worker 3, or a maintenance worker 3, and that is the position that we're trying to fill. So he did have that position, and he retired in December.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Any questions from the public? If not, the council?
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Pinon?
Yes.
Mayor Bettencourt?
Yes. Number 12, adopt resolution number 2017-070, approving the submittal of a grant application to the State of California for the Sustainable Agricultural Lands Conservation Program.
Good evening, Council. Happy to answer any questions you have.
I just had a question or just a clarification. We have some of this on our general plan already, don't we?
The general plan indicated that there would be a farmland preservation plan that would be prepared as part of the implementation of the 2030 general plan. We're seeking grant dollars to initiate that process.
Okay. Are there any funds that the city has to pay to do this?
There's a 10% match that's required. 5% of that can be in kind, so it can be labor provided by staff. So 5% of that would be $5,000 in kind, and we allocated $5,000 within the current year budget in anticipation of receiving these grant funds.
Okay. So most of it is grant money?
It is, yeah. So the total cost would be $110,000. $100,000 of that would be grant funded.
Yeah. Terry, can you explain, and I hope the paper will pick this up, can you explain a little bit more of what this program is all about?
Sure. A farmland preservation plan is a way that your community comes together to indicate how they're going to protect their important farm and range lands within their area. That can be done through items ranging all the way from easements to mitigation programs where you can purchase lands at a one-to-one or a two-to-one basis, something of that nature that can either be within your community or outside of your community if you're in agreements with another community to do that. But the entire goal of it is to really address any of the impacts to agricultural lands that development might have associated with the building of your community.
Okay, good. Thank you.
As you know, I'm very interested in agriculture in our community and our area, and I want to make sure that gets transferred to whoever's doing this plan, that this isn't a San Francisco or an LA plan, this is a Reedley plan.
I wholeheartedly agree. I'm a Valley champion for that, I guarantee you. That's very, very important.
Maybe very different from maybe some of the things that they're used to doing.
Are there any questions from the public? Any more from the council? Do I hear a motion?
I'll move to approve.
Second.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Pignon?
Yes.
Mayor Bettencourt?
Yes. Number 13, adopt resolution number 2017-071, amending the 2017-18 adopted budget, appropriating $300,000 in the general fund reserve for a payment to the Consolidated Irrigation District Groundwater Exchange Program pursuant to an approved and executed settlement agreement.
I can go ahead and answer any questions you may have on it.
Okay. I just had a question. We're going to be using our reserves to pay this. Is there any other funds that might be available, or loans or grants that we can get to maybe help to offset some of this to replenish our
reserve
fund?
As far as grants, it would be hard to get grants to pay a legal settlement. Because that's how it would be looked at, even though we know these funds are to be used for groundwater recharge. However, the council may recall that in this coming year's budget, we did up the legal fees for this department, thinking that we would be in a trial, thinking that it would then go to appeal. And so what we will be doing is, once the final bills come in from our attorneys, any leftover funding that we have that we allocated for legal services in the mid-year budget, we'll bring that back to council, and we'll reallocate that back to the reserve. At this point, I can't give you an idea how much that is because we don't have the final bills in yet, and we still have some wind down, but we will be replenishing a little bit of the reserve at that point. Okay. So don't spend it all, Rob.
Yeah. Well, as you know, I think the reserves in a organization is very important for emergencies similar to this. Mm-hmm. So I just want to have a comfort level that we'll be replenishing that. Thank you.
We agree completely, and in fact, Paul and I put our heads together, sometimes not in a nice friendly way, but really how are we going to pay this and whether we should pay this. And I think we both have the same philosophy that replenishing the reserves is a very high priority for us given the emergencies we've seen come up in the city. And so that will be our first priority as we move through the fiscal year.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question? To avoid what we just went through, are we going to eliminate doing any development on the west side of the river?
Part of the settlement agreement is that we will not develop on the west side until our GSA has created their GSP and it's been approved by the state. And that's purposeful so that we know that the groundwater aquifers are sustainable in both Alta's area, or our area, and Consolidated's area.
Okay.
So
if that happens, is there a possibility they can come back to us?
And sue us, you mean?
Yes.
After the 2021 year, anything is possible. However, with an approved general plan and an approved groundwater sustainability plan, I can't think of what they could possibly want to sue us over.
Well, you never know about these laws.
I would editorialize right here, but that would be inappropriate of me. So anything is possible. However, if what they told us is true in reality, that they're concerned about the groundwater, I see very little that they could sue us over at that point.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
I just wanted to make a comment, actually. First of all, $300,000 is a lot of money, so I wrote ouch on my notes. And on the recommendation segment, it says one-time payment. I'm really glad to see that and to see that Consolidated Irrigation District hopefully is behind us for a little while. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad to see that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
One comment is that I've had a couple of people talk to me about this in the public, and they're quite pleased with the way this went down because no one likes to be in litigation. Mm-hmm. And they looked at that one-time fee as an important factor because they knew what that could cost the city year after year. So. Mm-hmm.
Good. Good.
Any more comments from the council? From the public, is there any comments? If not, do I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Councilmember Bass?
Yes.
Councilmember Pignon?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Mayor Bettencourt?
Yes. Okay, we'll move on to our workshop on street maintenance.
Okay, good evening, Mayor and City Council. I'm Paul Malikian, and the presentation tonight was a joint effort between the Public Works Department and our engineering department. So Russ Robertson and John Robertson had a lot to do with the information contained in the slides. We just thought for continuity purposes that I would be the one presenting the information, but in reality there was three of us plus the city manager who spent some considerable time on this information. So this is sort of part two of what the council had discussed and reviewed back in March when they reviewed the results of the pavement management plan. That was the plan that a consultant was hired to do to evaluate the pavement condition index and the best way to spend our limited streets dollars to have the biggest impact. So with that, I will jump right in. There are copies of the slides if they are hard to see on the screen. I do apologize in advance that the slides are fairly wordy, but just in case you want to reference this information later, most of the information is contained on the slides. So starting with that, what is prompting this workshop primarily was the passage of the Road Repair and Accountability Act of 2017, signed into law by Governor Brown, also known as SB1. So that that's prompting this action tonight to review in a workshop setting. There's no actions requested of the council at this time. So just to jump right in, the components of a street are more than just what maybe somebody walking down the street would know. And it's more than just the asphalt. So of course the asphalt or concrete components is a big part of it, but you also have traffic signage and striping and traffic lights, the street lights, as well as the monthly utilities on the street lights, curb and gutter, sidewalks, curb ramps, the beacons, and the storm drain inlets and the drainage systems. So obviously there's a lot of components that go into a roadway. So just keep that in mind as we start talking about our budget numbers, because what was contained in the pavement management plan was primarily the actual paving work, but it didn't really address all these other components of the street that still do have costs associated with maintaining and improving them. So I do apologize again for all the information on the slide, so you can take a look at the printout if you need to. But we thought it'd be important to talk about what our current funding picture looks like for our streets and roads in the city.
We do receive local transportation funds from the state, also known as Article 3 and Article 8 funding. Article 8 is the biggest component the city receives, between $500,000 and $600,000 annually. And it is used primarily for streetlight electrical and maintenance, the striping, pothole repairs, and signal light maintenance, also used for sidewalks. After salaries and operational costs, primarily operational costs, only approximately $100,000 annually is used for actual street maintenance materials. So again, that's that actual paving work after you take out all the other operational costs of maintaining our road system. I did mention Article 3 funds. That's a much smaller funding source of approximately $18,000 annually, and it's primarily been used for sidewalks. We also receive an allocation of CDBG, the Community Development Block Grant Funds, of approximately $230,000 annually. As the council knows, it can only be spent in CDBG eligible areas, which are, if you're looking at it from a streets perspective, covers approximately 30% of our street system in the city. In the past, it's typically been used for slurry seal projects. Again, in the pavement management plan, that was identified as the biggest bang for the buck. Most recently, we've spent it on the bathroom at Pioneer Park, so it is eligible for other uses. So that is a flexible funding source as long as it's being spent in the CDBG eligible area. But this is included in our presentation tonight because typically and historically we've used it for streets projects. We do receive our allocation of gas tax, the existing gas tax, not the new gas tax that was just passed into law. It's approximately $553,000. We've seen that actually start to spiral downwards in the last couple of years. So we've had to move some salaries that are typically paid for out of gas tax into our Article 8 funds. It's an eligible funding source for the salaries. But the gas tax, the existing gas tax covers about 80% of our streets maintenance crew of their salaries and benefits. Moving on, we do, of course, get our Measure C allocations, approximately $625,000 annually. It's primarily project-based and for grant matching, but we cannot use it on a regular, we do not use it for a regular maintenance program. We typically use it for larger, for larger projects like Reed Avenue Phase 2, Manning Avenue Phase 1, the design phase, and East Avenue Sidewalk design phase. Those are some current projects, John. Those are some current projects that are included in this year's budget, so we use those as an example. We also get State Transportation Improvement Plan, also known as STIP Lifeline dollars, so $350,000 every 2 years, or we can split it up and spend it at $175,000 annually. It's a flexible program and it can be used for maintenance or capacity increasing projects. So that's important, capacity increasing, because not all funding sources can be used to increase capacity, only to maintain your existing streets. We also get CMAQ dollars, congestion mitigation air quality, also known as lifeline dollars, $200,000 of federal funding every 2 years, just like STIP, or if you split it out annually, it's about $100,000. Can be used for a number of traffic congestion mitigation measures to improve air quality. So this is again centered on air quality. It's historically primarily been used for sidewalks to encourage people to walk instead of drive, again to improve air quality, and cannot be used for streets maintenance. So you're seeing a theme here that every funding source has its own little rule set that we have to abide by. And these are audited. Sometimes they're audited regionally, sometimes they're audited at the state level. In fact, the city just had a gas tax audit about 3 years ago, if I remember correctly, and it was a fairly exhaustive process. And as they told us as they walked out the door, they will be back. Okay, moving on to the next slide, and I think this is our last slide talking about streets funding. We also have a vehicle impact fee that's funded out of the Solid Waste Enterprise Fund, and that is to fund road reconstruction projects, and that's a fairly new revenue stream for streets funding, and that was started in 2013-14 fiscal year, and again, it's for specific road reconstruction projects. We also receive developer impact fees from new construction, and it's known as the traffic facilities impact fee that was reclassified to a transportation facility fee as of the last impact fee study. And that's, of course, used to mitigate the impact of new development or construction. For example, traffic signals, roadway widening, or even a roundabout. but it's important that it cannot be used for maintenance activities. That one's only for new construction. And then competitive funding, as those funding sources come available, the Highway Safety Improvement Program and the Alternative Transportation ATP dollars. Again, competitive, it's not guaranteed allocation like many of our revenue streams. And an important note to make for the new gas tax is that the city currently has no general fund contribution to streets maintenance. Most Valley cities, from my experience and knowledge, are hard-pressed to contribute any general fund to streets maintenance activities. It's not unheard of, but typically cities have a hard time doing that because of the public safety needs that are very pressing. Okay, that covers the streets funding. Again, a lot of information on those slides so that if you chose to go back to them. The idea was not to focus on those tonight so much, although if you have questions, please shoot, but it was just to give you an idea of what we had available to us currently. The pavement management plan sums up our funding.
Can I go back to the first part?
Yes, sir.
The one that I'm concerned about is the Article 3 funding for approximately $18,000 on sidewalks. That's where I get a lot of complaints of people in different parts of the city that those sidewalks, you know, are lifting in certain parts. How serious are we about taking care of those things as far as liability?
If the as far as liability is concerned,
do you know anybody that's going to trip over something like that, they're going to file something against the city?
Yeah, we take it really seriously. Yes. To the point where some of that Article 3 money is actually used for Precision Engineering. Is that the name of the firm?
Precision Concrete.
Where we have them come through annually now and shave down sidewalks we have seen are lifted. We take it extraordinarily seriously now.
In fact, the city has been identified regionally as a leader in sidewalk liability through our use of this company. It's a very high-tech type of technique that they use to shave the sidewalks, but we've been recognized up and down the valley through our use of this technology.
Because I walked on Birch Avenue next to Franklin, and it's bad. Mm-hmm. It's lifting quite a bit. And one of the residents said that they've had people trying to jog or whatever, walk through there and trip. It's a good thing we haven't heard from them. So I'm just letting you know that Birch on the east side on Birch Avenue.
Okay. Thank you for that. And if you have people you speak to that run across streets, they can give us some specifics.
Sure.
Please do let us know.
Right. All right. Yeah. No problem.
Okay. Well, moving on to the pavement management plan, just one slide on this because it basically summarized what our current funding situation is very well. The plan was completed earlier this year, so the information is very current. And it identified that the city would need to make an investment of $4 million annually for just paving work to just maintain the current pavement condition index of 54. So I felt that that was a sobering moment for staff, at least, that we currently spend about $1 million a year in paving activities. So we're about 25% of where we need to be just to maintain our current road conditions. And again, you know, we're not alone. I think most of you are all aware of the situation statewide. The new gas tax that I will be talking about just in a moment adds about $475,000. Let's call it $500,000 a year in new gas tax revenue. This gas tax revenue is different than the existing gas tax, and I'll talk about that, but I'm bringing it up right now just to show that even with this new tax and fee that we're all going to be paying at the pump and in our vehicle registration, it's not a silver bullet. It adds $500,000, so instead of $1 million a year, we'll be at $1.5 million a year. That's still a far cry from $4 million a year.
Can I ask a question on that? Is that going to be allowed to do actually repair work on the roads, or is it going to be for other things?
Roads. And there's a lot of accountability built into this and a lot of rules that we're going to be talking about. But it's primarily for rehabilitation and maintenance.
Yeah, I just find it interesting that of all of these, I didn't count how many funding sources we have, but very few of them are actually
for maintenance
to actually do work on the streets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To repair. And if we don't do that, then we as a city lose.
So I always tell folks, if you can fill your car up in town, that helps ever so slightly. But the pavement management plan, in essence, prioritizes projects with the funding we do have for the biggest impact. So the plan's conclusion is quoted below. The highest and best use of limited road funds is to address streets with a PCI, that's pavement condition index, of 50 to 75 with light to moderate maintenance activities such as crack sealing, slurry seals, up to overlays. So that's where your biggest bang for the buck according to our pavement management plan. So just to talk a moment, this is kind of a refresher from the pavement management plan presentation. Why is a pavement condition index of 50 to 75 so important? The pavement condition index going from 100, which is a perfect brand new road, down to zero, which is basically nothing. You can see that on the bottom, as the road ages 1 to 5 years, 6 to 10 years, all the way out to its theoretical life of 25 to 30 years, that as it ages, the cost to rehab that road increases exponentially. So our target is to hit those roads that are in the blue. So the cost is $15 to $20 a square yard. Again, these aren't particular R numbers, but statewide they've been used by the League of California Cities to explain how the cost goes from 2 to 4 to 15 to 20, and then literally it doubles every 5 years, every 5 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to catch those roads and streets in the sweet spot there. Okay, moving on to the new gas tax, and that's my own name for it. It's known as the Road Maintenance and Rehabilitation Act. It was signed into law by Governor Brown in April 2017. It's to address basic road maintenance, rehabilitation, and critical safety needs on both the state highway and local streets and road systems. So it's important to note that a lot of money is being redirected to our state highway system as well, not to increase capacity, unfortunately, but to address those maintenance concerns. It establishes new taxes and fees, and it's the first gas tax increase in 23 years. So I got that information from the state legislative analyst's office. I have not checked that information, but it sounds about right to me. So it establishes new excise taxes on fuel. It does introduce inflationary adjustments, which is interesting because it hasn't had that in the past. So as the costs go up to maintain the road, we're going to start to see some inflationary adjustments. The electric vehicles, also known as EVs, are finally going to be paying their fair share. And I have an arrow, and it's a picture of an example of an electric vehicle that is typically parked at City Hall between the hours of 8 and 5, Monday through Friday, and it's being charged by our new solar station there. So that's just an example of a vehicle that eventually pay their fair share. The annual, as previously mentioned.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, you're very
welcome. It's actually Rob's car. So. Thank you, Rob. You didn't even know. Yeah, it's fair there. So as previously mentioned, the annual revenue estimate for Freedly is about $475,000 once it's up and running. Sorry about that. It cannot be spent on increasing capacity, maintenance, and rehab only. I previously mentioned that. It's also important to note to the council, our current gas tax fund is fully allocated. Remember when I talked about it's paying 80% of our salaries and benefits for our existing streets maintenance crew. So there's no room in that existing gas tax right now, and that's been the problem. So this is all new money here. Moving on, one more slide on the specifics. The tax increases will take effect this November 1st, and the new vehicle registration fees will begin this January. Fees on zero emission vehicles, as previously pictured, will take effect on July 1st, 2020. So they get a couple of years more freedom. To raise a projected $52.4 billion over 10 years statewide, the changes to taxes and fees include a 12% increase in gas tax, a 20% increase in diesel. There's going to be an add-on diesel sales tax that goes from an existing 1.75% to 5.75%. That's in addition to the 20 cents. And a new transportation improvement fee will annually charge drivers between $25 and $175, depending upon the value of the vehicle. And it doesn't take long for your vehicle to be charged at the higher echelons. If your vehicle is worth over $30,000 or $40,000, then you're going to be paying at the top end. So it's only the real low-value vehicles that are going to be paying the cheaper rate, and that will be added to your registration fees.
Paul, can I just ask, how much is this going to go of this tax bill? How much is that going to high-speed rail?
None of it. And that's what a lot of critics have talked about, is that some of the funds that maybe should have been going to our roads have been funneled to high-speed rail. I don't know all the specifics, but this money specifically is for road maintenance. It's dedicated. It's protected in the law. There is no other uses that are allowed except for what's in the law.
Okay, I remember reading the article where they said this tax dollars, the Sacramento cannot pork barrel to other projects.
The only exception is, and I was going to get into that into a later slide, is that if your PCI is 80 or better, so if you're in a more affluent area that has a lot more money to funnel into their roads, if you have 80 or better on your PCI, then you can use the funding for transportation projects, transportation centers, different ways of getting around. We unfortunately don't have that problem, so our funds are going to be used for roads, road maintenance. Just one more comment on the zero emission vehicles, and then I'll definitely stop talking about it, is that the annual fee is going to be $100 and it will be CPI adjusted. All of these fees, excise taxes, will be CPI adjusted beginning in 2020. Okay, the eligible uses of SB1, I apologize for all the information on the slide. They're similar to our existing gas tax, but not identical. So they must be used for projects that are road maintenance and rehab, safety projects, railroad grade separations. I thought that was fairly interesting. Traffic control devices, and something called a complete street component. And that's something that our city engineer can talk about if you're more interested, including active transportation purposes, pedestrian and bicycle safety. So basically, cars don't rule the road in this situation. It's a balanced where you have multimodal types of projects. So interesting is you have drainage and stormwater capture projects. And you can also use this funding to satisfy a match requirement. So that's interesting because we use some of our existing funding sources to match federal or state grants. So this is an interesting tool in the future to potentially use this to match some grant opportunities. As previously mentioned, this is different than the old gas tax. There are a lot of accountability and reporting requirements built into SB1. We have to submit an annual spending plan and an annual plan and an annual report at the end of the year of how we spent those funds. It's entirely project based. So every year after the budget adoption, the city must submit a detailed list of proposed projects to the California Transportation Commission. And when I say detailed, they're looking for like this street from this terminus to this terminus. So very specific. Fortunately, our pavement management plan is the perfect tool for us to build upon and be able to just take that plan and use that to build our project list and to take that to the council for recommendation. We do have some upcoming deadlines that the council needs to be aware of. We have California Transportation Commission, also known as CTC. They have a call for project list that'll open shortly in August 18th. And the project list from our city is due back to them in September 15th to be exact. The detail on the completed projects must be reported annually to the CTC after we spend all that money. The first completed project report, which is how we spent the first year's money, is due by October 1st of 2018. So you have some additional reporting and accountability requirements on staff to complete. There's a maintenance of effort. I don't know if you've ever heard this term before, but basically we cannot supplant any existing levels of spending for streets maintenance. And this is specific to the general fund. And as I mentioned earlier, we don't have any existing level support out of the general fund. So our maintenance of effort is easily met. It would be different if we were putting in $500,000 a year and we would suddenly drop it to 250. That would be a problem for SB1. But we still have to go through the exercise. Ooh. This is an interesting one that's going to kick in a few years from now. I say a few, but it's, I guess it'll be here before we know it. By 2023, there's going to be a workforce development requirement that's going to create requirements for participation, investment, or partnership with pre-apprenticeship training, like the California Conservation Corps and our local conservation corps. So depending upon how we deploy these funds, we'll have to start thinking about that in a couple of years. And this is good in a way, as our public works director was just talking about, we're having problems finding qualified people. Mm-hmm. So maybe this isn't such a bad requirement, but that's my personal opinion. Okay.
I have a question, Paul. If we go back to the city must submit a detailed list of proposed projects to the CA Transportation Commission. Now, this is what we're going to do with the city. Now, is it possible those projects can be divided so that each district that we represent gets a portion of that?
Well, can certainly talk about those options. We've identified two very distinct options for the funding. As far as which projects get funded, that is set through the appropriation of the council. Right. So we do have a pavement management plan, and the pavement management plan is based on sound science. So our PCI is spitting out, that plan is spitting out what the highest or the worst streets in the city to do.
Right.
So it's basically blind to the boundaries of your district. It could be that it's all in one district or spread over only two or three, mm-hmm. but that's going to be addressed a little bit here shortly.
And the reason I'm asking, because anytime there's streets that are being done, other district individuals will ask, how come our area doesn't get any kind of improvement? Well, the funding can only go to certain areas.
Well, right. And some funding sources are only eligible to be right. used in certain areas.
But so. Does the public know about that? Mm. Do we right. give enough information to the public? That's Absolutely. My biggest concern, that whatever we do, the public does not get enough information of what we're doing. That's why they criticize the city. How come they're doing that, but not over here?
That's a good
I've
point.
I've always been a proponent of information to the public okay. so they can support our programs.
Okay. All right. Well, this might
Sorry to interrupt.
No, absolutely. It's a great point, and it's something that we might have some good ideas after taking a look at the options that staff has identified. And again, this is...
Right.
This is the result of hours of discussion on, you know, how best to lay out these options, what's available to us.
Yeah.
The first option that we've identified is to expand the City of Reedley in-house streets maintenance activities. So we already have a streets maintenance crew. We have some of the equipment already in place. So we're going to talk about that as a potential one option to potentially make our dollars stretch even further. Option two is simply to contract it out, to use the funds and contract it out to a private vendor and to go through our city engineer and do it more of the traditional way and just add to those other project funds. So option one, to give a little more detail to that, would be to ramp up our slurry seal, our crack seal, and our streets maintenance operations. So this option has some benefits to it in that the city has already invested in the necessary equipment to do slurry seal. We lease financed a slurry seal machine a couple years ago, and we have it in our yard currently. We purchased a trailer for this, and we do have staff that are trained on the equipment. We also have the existing crew that could be built upon. So there's a crew that's already there. The really big benefit is the potential to do a projected 23 blocks a year of slurry seal, chip seal, crack sealing type of work, plus some limited alley work. And that was something that we really paid attention to, because a lot of people don't see the alleys, but there are a lot of different alleys in the city that aren't so bad that you couldn't go down there and slurry seal them and extend the life. So with an internal crew, you could do some limited alley work as well. Obviously, that wouldn't be the priority because that's not where all the traffic is. But so the initial focus would be, though, on the collectors and the local residential streets. And again, that's per our pavement management plan. That's where it's identified our biggest bang for the buck is on the collectors and the residential streets. One benefit, and this is to raise point just a little bit, is that the projects could be widely dispersed throughout the city. Again, not necessarily pursuant to council boundaries, but pursuant to our pavement management plan. They could be widely dispersed. And since you'd be doing many more blocks under this scenario, there's a higher chance of there being some activity near the person that's asking that question. A huge benefit that a lot of people don't realize is that our crack ceiling would go up about 50%. A crack ceiling was identified in the pavement management plan as really extending the life of the roadway. So this applies to arterials, collectors, and our local residential streets. It's a proven method of extending our pavement life. Okay, just a couple more points on option one. Even with doing a lot of the work in-house, it still allows for a portion of the annual allocation to be used annually for discretionary projects. So to add to the funds that are currently available for larger projects, like a full reconstruction project or matching funds for other available streets funding. It would be a 2018 implementation if the council would like to pursue something that's like option one, because it would take time for us to gear up, to find qualified staff. And I say qualified staff in that under this scenario, we would have additional required staffing to make this plan work. We just can't do it with the existing body counts that we have. We would need one supervisor and two additional maintenance worker positions. There would be no impact to the general fund of option one. It's revenue neutral in that regard. So again, some advantages and disadvantages. Our dollars are stretched very far because we're not having to pay for the profit and the maintenance and the insurance and the bid bonds and everything else that go along with hiring contractors. More projects are therefore completed. We have higher visibility throughout the city, more miles of pavement that are touched. It still allows for discretionary projects, and it's general fund neutral. Now, some disadvantages, and these are honest. The recruitment challenges for qualified maintenance personnel is there. We're going to try this new way of using basically a headhunter to find somebody qualified. It puts a heavier burden on our supervisory staff. Mm-hmm. So, our folks are already busy. This puts a heavier burden on them. They're always up to the challenge, but it is a reality. And funding for the additional staff and the materials to implement this option would not be available for the large projects, the reconstruction project. So that's kind of a given, right? If you're going to spend it in one area, it's not available for other projects. Option two, contracting it out, it's pretty simple, right? Where outside paving contractors bid on and perform the projects. The actual available projects for construction work will be reduced, though, because of I talked about the previous soft costs for construction management. That's something that is typically hired out, bid specs, the bonds, the insurance, and their profit margins. That's priced into every bid that we award. So likely, if we were to use it for the same type of slurry chip seal program, we would see approximately a third of the blocks. We could see about 7 to 8 blocks per year if we decided to use it just for slurry and chip seal. Based on what the current prices are out in the market for these types of projects, we'd see about 7 to 8 blocks a year instead of 23 blocks a year. If we were to use the funds instead for full reconstruction projects, like our vehicle impact fee, we would likely only see 2 to 3 blocks per year because of the huge cost of doing a full roadbed reconstruction. One advantage is it does not require any additional city staff, and it allows for the maximum amount of matching funds for other city projects that we currently have other streets funds for, but we're waiting to accumulate enough Measure C funds for example. So some advantages of option two, it allows for a priority focus on expensive arterials such as Manning, Dinuba, Buttonwillow, I Street. So it does allow more funds to go towards those very expensive arterials that are, some of them are in pretty bad shape. It slightly decreases the time the city has to wait to get enough money allocated to those projects. I say slightly because some of these projects are in the millions. So even if you had another $500,000 a year, it's just going to shorten that time period by a couple of years. It's not going to be a silver bullet. Disadvantages, we felt was pretty big, that the fewer projects are getting done, so there's fewer miles of pavement that are touched in the city annually. The impact to the existing engineering staff, so we talked about the burden on supervisory staff earlier. Option two would put more burden on engineering staff to manage these additional projects, especially during that busy paving season. A big one we felt that was important to highlight to the council was that the crack sealing and maintenance activities would not increase over the current levels. So we would be bidding out these projects, but that crack sealing that is done all the time, that we're able to get into these small streets and do crack sealing, we wouldn't have those additional staff members to do that when there's downtime. And with using the funds for the expensive arterials and the full reconstruction projects, that would actually not be consistent with the recommendations in the pavement management plan. Again, they recommended taking our limited dollars and applying them to the biggest bang for the buck. So in conclusion, this is a workshop only. The council is not asked to make any decisions tonight formally, though we do request any feedback that you have at this time. We need to prepare action items shortly. The CTC, California Transportation Commission, their call for project lists will come in August. We have two council meetings in between the period in which they open the call and then they close the call for projects. So we have the August 22nd council meeting and we have the September 12th council meeting. So we'd like to bring back a proposed project list at the August 22nd meeting, if possible, to give us a one meeting buffer in case we need additional time. Again, the project list is due just a few days later, September 15th. And then sometime in October, they're proposing by August 18th that they're going to adopt the list of eligible cities. So if our project list meets all the criteria, they will approve us and they'll submit our name to the state controller, which will then allow them to start distributing this new gas tax revenue to us. Now, important point when we talk about the phase-in, because it's starting in November this year, the city will only receive approximately $175,000 next year of this new gas tax money. So our project list, no matter what option is chosen, will be somewhat shorter than what it is going to be at once it's fully implemented. So just to put in your head, it's about $175,000 the first year and about $475,000 every year thereafter. I do expect that to go up a little bit as the inflationary adjustments kick in. So with that, that concludes our formal presentation. Our city engineer and city public works director are available here for questions.
I have a question. On page 3, you talk about the vehicle impact fee of the $200,000. Is there a way of putting that back into the disposal budget and then use this other money to supplant that?
The vehicle impact fee is currently part of the adopted budget as approved by the council. So that would require an action of the city council, but definitely anything's possible. Anything's possible, but it is part of the adopted budget document this year. And we do have a project that is programmed in. I don't remember exactly what it is, but North Avenue? Tinuba Avenue is programmed in for this next fiscal year. But to answer your question, yes, it is possible. So we would like your feedback just because there's quite a bit of work either way in the next month as far as which direction the council would like to take this. We felt that it was either option one or option two. We didn't feel like there was a good hybrid solution between the two, because we either get enough staff and materials to do the job right internally, or we just take all the money and contract it out. And so I don't want to be so callous as far as that sounds, but if there's another idea that you all have, we'd love to hear it.
And frankly, council, if we were to decide that we wanted to bring on the additional staff and do all the work in-house, it would be harder to do that first and then change our minds and contract, because we would have that staff that we would have to then lay off. Yeah. Versus if we wanted to try contracting it out first and then move on to hiring new staff. With the recruiting, and by the way, it really isn't necessarily one or the other, I think, right now, because with our challenges in recruiting, it could be for this next year, we just try to get some streets patched and fixed with what's coming in. And then throughout the year, we can really evaluate the best bang for the buck as we see what the recruiting market is like and as we see what the contracting market is like, because you'll need to recall that each and every city around the state will be getting additional road funds, which means these contractors are going to be very busy, and their prices are probably going to be going up because of that. So I think we're going to see things evolve and change over the course of the year. I think where Paul is going tonight is, if you really feel strongly one way or the other, like you don't want us to add staff no matter what, we would want to hear that so we don't go down the wrong road. Or if you say we only want to do things in-house because it really maximizes the bang for the buck, then that helps us. If it really is something where you want to see how this unfolds, then we will continue to work on this together as a team and bring you something at the August meeting, because primarily what's really, really important for that August meeting is the street project list itself. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't have that to the state in September, we will not get these funds, period, whether or not we contract it out or whether or not we bring in staff. So we're really looking for whether any council members feel strongly one way or the other at this point.
I think right now I would love to see it be an in-house project. However, we're so new into this, I think we need to stay on the same path we are right now until we kind of get a feel of things. That's personally. I think until we start seeing the flow and the money and that we can stabilize the other projects, I think we kind of have to gear to contracting out or what is needed now. And sometimes there's going to be projects. I don't believe that just in-house personnel can fill in at this time. So I like I said, I like the one about being able to do more projects in-house, but I think that's something we need to maybe wait and see where the funding and how it's going to impact us, and that we can set up into that program of as we feel how this money flows in and how they're going to allow us to use it and everything else. I think we'll have a definite impact. So and it gives you a little flexibility, because nothing says we can't do an in-house project during that time frame.
Yeah, it, a lot of the limitations for the in-house is just the lack of the positions. Right. So that's the hard part, is that even if there was a window, if we don't have the staff on staff. Right. So the one thing that we were kind of salivating at the thought of this, well, I don't know if you were salivating at it. I mean, it's paving work, right? So we get excited about things. But is that we have a slurry seal machine right now that's not being used every day of the year because we just don't have the staff to operate it all the time. It's being used in a limited capacity. This, you know, we'd love to keep that thing just going all the time from May to, you know, October or whatever. So, but anyway, absolutely. So this is, it's still very new and fresh, but our primary goal is to get to this date of September 15th. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you have to put that together, the project you think you can get done in the manner that we're going to do them. I mean, if it means contracting with someone to get those done, I really think it's going to depend on what you guys can throw together that's going to be the project that's most viable for us.
I guess what we could do, and we haven't heard from all the council, but maybe an idea that just popped into my head is that we could potentially prepare two project lists based on these two options and say, okay, under this project list, and again, for the first year, it's not going to be a huge swing because it's a smaller revenue stream coming in. So for the first year, there won't be a big difference. But I guess what we could do is prepare two different project lists and present to the council of city manager.
We'll talk through that.
Yeah.
Could you do like part, like instead of hiring the full crew, hire like one or two guys, you know, so you could ramp up like a little bit at a time.
Sure.
Instead of a full crew just dedicated to that. But ideally, of course, we would like to do it in-house because it's cheaper. But that may not be a smart option, at least for this year, is how I see it.
I just wonder, do we have an idea, dollar amount, what it would be to hire staff as opposed to contracting it out? Would it be worth it? You know, there's.
Well, the cost of staff is constant and the materials, but the contracts are basically what the bids are coming in at. So that wasn't part of our analysis. It was more on the activity. So what would a result from in-house would be 23 blocks a year plus limited alley work versus 7 to 8 blocks a year if we were to contract it out, based on what those bid prices are coming in at right now.
Yeah, I was thinking more so upon thinking about option one, hire, having in-house, we would have our folks at all times and they would be there.
Which is that, that's where the crack sealing comes in, because that would allow them, if they're not paving, they could be crack sealing.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
But isn't that the problem, is we get the personnel being able to operate? And that's why I'm saying that you kind of have to, that the first section out is going to be kind of by ear. You're going to have to, if you can slide work in for the city at the time that we can do, that's a little different. But I'm thinking that you may have to contract out just to meet what we need to meet as far as our projects that we need to get on that list.
Do you, City Manager, do you know if other cities have their own staff doing this kind of work?
It's all across the board. Most cities are like ours. They have some internal staff that do it, and they also contract out. So that's what we do. You notice Reed Avenue, North Avenue, we're bringing contracting firms. But then because we do have our slurry seal machine, and we do have very capable, qualified staff who can slurry seal and crack seal. I shouldn't say all cities, because there are some very, very small cities like Perler that don't have in-house staff. They don't have a slurry seal machine. I think this council did a very wise thing a few years ago and funded that machine, because that machine will do us very well when we have extra money for extra materials. It's really the materials money that's important to us over time. So I think what you're going to find throughout the state is a little mix of everything. Yeah. And I did like Councilmember Soleno's comment about looking by district. I know that it becomes very important. We want to make sure that every part of our city is getting attention. So when we look at that projects list we bring you, I think we'll also look at it through that lens when we bring you that project list. So.
Are there any more questions from the public? Okay, so do you want to feel for what, are you happy with what comments we've made, or?
Well, Council, what I'm hearing, and please do correct me if I'm wrong, what I'm hearing is that you'd like us to take a look at what we think is realistic to get done with the limited dollars we'll get this first year, and then bring you that recommendation with a project list on August 22nd.
Yeah.
Right.
I think
okay with that?
That's good. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sounds good. Yeah.
It's very helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Okay, we have some just 18 and 19 are information and reports. And then we have some brief report by the council members. Let me start with you, Councilman Soleno. Anything you would like to?
The only thing I have is that the river is being used very, very well. And I guess there's been a couple of incidents reported to the police department. Something about some problems with some of the swimmers, unless I got misinformation.
Good evening, Council. Mark Ediger, Acting Chief for the missing Chief Garza. we've had a few incidents. We had a domestic violence incident over the weekend that was reported. Kind of an isolated incident in and of itself. It wasn't, although it was a felony incident, it wasn't terribly severe. We did have a report yesterday of a possible drowning. Luckily, fire was, Captain Watson was there with our guys fairly quickly, and a couple of guys that were swimming with a younger boy were able to pull him back to the beach. He was struggling a little bit, but he never actually went underwater. We've had a few calls for service just based on suspicious people, but outside of those few events that I just mentioned, it's been good so far. We did assign this past weekend, I assigned one body specifically to the beach from 1 p.m. Saturday and Sunday all the way until 9 p.m. With the option to extend until closing. We're closing the park at 10. So we're going to continue to do that throughout every weekend right now that we have the beach open. If I feel the need to increase staff beyond the one that we're going to put down there, we will definitely do that.
You bring a dog along down there then, too?
We always generally have two canines on duty on the weekend anyway, so if that's the dog that you're referring to.
No. Yes, that's what I meant. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
That didn't come out very good, did it? Sorry.
yeah, we have two canines on the weekends.
Okay, so whoever's on duty down there will also bring a dog with them?
And I've also, you know, obviously we have people down there every day of the week now.
Right.
School's out, and so our officers have been instructed daily to do numerous patrol checks and really start making our presence known down there. So we'll continue to work with city staff and public works and Joel with his people down there collecting money on the weekends, and any adjustments that we need to make, we can make very quickly.
There's some good comments about along Reed Avenue, South Reed, and along Cemetery, where there's been a few individuals cited for speeding.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Which is good comments on that.
Good.
Yeah. Officer Purcell has been able to get on the bike more lately, which is a good thing, especially with the summertime and increased traffic. If any of you read the weekly update that we put out, I put in a distracted driving piece this week. Just
right.
We see on the news there's so many fatalities every week. Luckily, we don't have too much high-speed traffic in town, but it's very important for us to really focus on traffic issues as well. So.
Thank you.
Do we have any more like to share? Councilman Salina?
Oh, I'm sorry. Uh-huh. No, that's it.
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay. Councilman Fast?
Speaking of the river, I just had a question on the restrooms on the beach side. Are those restrooms up and working again? Okay. Was there water that got in on the Cricket Hollow side, on the other side, on the restrooms at all, or did I wasn't here when the highest water was?
Yeah, we did have some flooding in the restrooms, but those restrooms have a lift pump, so they have to lift the sewer up to the wastewater treatment plant.
Okay.
So obviously, when the river starts rising, we shut the pumps off
and
disconnect the electric. So even though the restrooms flood, there's no contamination of mixing with the river.
Okay.
And those restrooms were placed back in use prior to the Reedy Beach opening. And also Chris Tamez, our roads and ground supervisor, put some porta potties out there in anticipation of the heavy use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. That's all that I have.
Okay. Councilman Pignon?
Yes, I just wanted to share, attended my first CEVTC meeting in June. Quite exciting things happening out there. Took a tour of the facility and pretty impressive to see what's going on in Reedley. Exciting. The bays for repairs on the buses and vehicles for our community are quite impressive. You know, there's a lot of bays in terms of within the building, and just to see that they can lift a gigantic bus on those lifts, it's pretty impressive under roof. So, and all the information that we obtained that's coming out of that meeting, it's pretty exciting and quite mind-boggling for me anyway. But excited to be there and glad to be part of it. Other than that,
that's it.
I'm good.
Okay.
I had the opportunity to attend the dog park opening. That was a great job. The Lions Club was very active in that, and I think provided a big portion of the funds. Am I correct, Joel? And you guys had a great opening there. It was a great turnout. We had a good crowd there, and I didn't have a dog to bring with me, but there was plenty there to go around if you wanted one. Well, one other question I have is, this would be for Russ. The tree, what's the status on that tree that's down on Cricket Hollow side? I have people that's asking me about that constantly.
Well, sure. We did have some tree arborist companies go out and take a look. It is much too dangerous to attack that tree until the river and the flows decrease. In order to get that tree out, there was no way to pull it out. There's no way to crane it out at this point. It has to be sectioned out, which means a man in the river with a chainsaw. A large portion of that tree is underwater, even though it doesn't look like it.
Yeah.
And so it's just you're risking somebody's life if they get in the water with a chainsaw. Something could roll on them.
Is there any danger of that tree pulling loose and going down the river?
Highly unlikely. It's very heavy.
Okay,
extremely heavy.
That was one of the things that was asked, and I told him I would see if I could find out for him. So
maybe a branch of the tree, you know,
yeah,
who
maybe
knows?
Segments of it.
But the tree itself,
okay,
highly unlikely.
That's
yeah.
what I needed. Okay. Thank you, Russ. Mm-hmm. And that's all I have, Mayor.
Okay. I also went to the dog park dedication, and I talked to Miss Weeby. She's a teacher at Washington, and she was saying she was really glad because I guess they can't walk their dogs anymore at the cemetery. And so she said this is really good. It came in just in time for them to come over here and use them, so worked out really good. So I also went to the Washington school. They had a celebration for their Save the Children. And they donated money and people that came from their organization. They were from New York, they were from Connecticut, they were from Los Angeles, and they came and worked on their library. They got new shelvings and just renovated. It looked so nice and just really did a really nice. It was a really nice celebration. It was a happy time. It was just fun. The kids were there and it was just fun. And it's nice to see that how that organization comes in and helps. And we're very fortunate that we were able to have that funding that comes in every year. So, anyway. And then I also went to the Omni. They have their new facility that they had the ribbon cutting. And it's they had like a baby shower because it's, well, Dr. Connell's there and he's a gynecologist, and so his staff is there. And it was real cute that they had a shower there, and they had some of the patients that worked there came in and they had a drawing, and it was just really nice. It's a beautiful facility. You can't believe how long it goes back. I forget how many rooms it has. It's toured. And I guess they're from Kern County, and they're moving into this area. I think they have one maybe in Fresno, or they're looking at Fresno. But we're really one of the first in this area out of Kern County that they're going to be working with. And I think they have behavioral health, and they have dentists, and what else? They have several other projects that they work on that they're going to come mm-hmm. back and do here. I think they're opening up. She told me the old Sears, that's what she had said. So where Sears was at, that they're working at. So, and dentistry is so expensive. So if we can get something where our kids, especially our young kids, can get their teeth worked on when they can affordable dental care, then that it's going to be a good thing. And it's here. If it's local, then that'll be nice. So, but anyway, I guess that was it for me.
Mayor, could I just? I almost forgot. I'd like to congratulate Police Department and the Fire Department. Chief knows about this. A couple of weeks ago, there was a barbecue at my daughter's house, and just happened that they barbecued in the backyard, and my son-in-law and a friend of his, and they walked away. They came over to our place to barbecue, to have a party, and the barbecue that they had, I guess it was a little breeze and some embers, hit some furniture, and it started a fire. And there was a young police officer, and I can't think of his name, that lives in that same area, just a few houses down, saw the smoke, thought it was his house, but then he found out it was my daughter's. So he runs up to the house and opened the door. He thought maybe somebody was inside. Kicked the door open, found that nobody was in there, and him and a neighbor started using the hoses to turn the fire off. Then the police department or the fire department come in, and they did a fantastic job in tearing it, about a $20,000 damage.
Mm.
But that was just a small part of what could have happened. Thank you.
Very good. So is there any other comments or reports? If not, we'll go into closed session.
We do have a few staff reports.
Staff reports, okay.
Mm-hmm. One is Sylvia will hand out in your boxes an article that was in this week's Business Journal. The title is Tesla of the Valley Skies, Mendota, Reedley Look to Become Aviation Pioneers. So we hit the front page of the Fresno Business Journal that goes to Fresno, Tulare, Kern, et cetera, counties. It's a great article, and frankly, when we talked to the reporter, I wasn't sure what angle he was taking. The article is great, though. It really talks about our program, some specifics. So we're getting some really good press on our electric aviation program, and it's very exciting. So she'll hand that out to you. There's also a really good article in this Business Journal edition about various chambers of commerce in our area and some funding cuts that they're all experiencing. And it appears as though we will now be one of the higher funders of chambers. So our subsidy to the chamber is becoming one of the highest at this point, given what's been happening to other chambers around the valley. So she's also handing that article out so that you can read that. If you're wanting to see the entire paper, I can provide that. We have one copy in our office, but we can get that to you. Also, the Marjorie Mason Center opened their service center here in Reedley, and I won't divulge location or such because they're still trying to keep things somewhat confidential due to safety reasons. But they've done a very nice job in creating offices for counseling and education, child care. We're excited that they're still in our community because with the shelter closing, we know that domestic violence in our communities here on the rural side is still a big issue. I was contacted by the Superior Court this week about helping them get the word out on the Marjorie Mason Center, and because the new center operations are here in Reedley, they contacted us first to see how we would go about getting word out. So they've provided us with flyers, English, the reverse side is Spanish, that we'll be putting in women's restrooms, in community center, in various other public places, and then for schools and other places where we know that adults and parents congregate, particularly the women, we'll be putting those in discrete locations where they could pick up a flyer so that they know who to turn to in for help. And frankly, Mayor, I was wanting to see if I could get a little bit of your help because I think your mothers might know of some good locations for Spanish-speaking residents who...
Our program, when we at the school, we work real close with Marjorie Mason.
My brain is automatically going to where our community meets, and I don't know all the places where we would have. So I have lots and lots of flyers if council members would like to distribute them at your churches, et cetera, places that you congregate, that would be great. Whatever help we can give them would be wonderful. Good. The couple of important meetings tomorrow, there's a joint Fresno Chamber of Commerce and EDC meeting at noon up in Fresno, and I will be attending that on behalf of the EDC. Interestingly enough, our chamber isn't part of this meeting, so I'm kind of curious what this meeting is about. We've not yet been given an agenda, so I don't know, but I will be attending that meeting on behalf of the EDC to see where we're going with economic development in our community. And then there's also a consolidated plan committee meeting tomorrow with the county. We are part of that consolidated plan with the county through our CDBG program, so I will be attending that, and I'll bring you back any pertinent information. Lastly from me, and I know we have a couple staff with some updates, on August 8th, it was our intent to go dark. We usually take one dark meeting in July, one dark meeting in August. Right now, we have no time-sensitive agenda items for the 8th. We do have several time-sensitive items for August 22nd, so that will be a little bit longer meeting, but unfortunately, we can't spread that out and move those up to the 8th. So I'm looking for just a quick straw poll if the council's desire would be to go dark. Again, right now we have no items scheduled for August 8th. If anything does come up on an emergency basis, we can give you a call. But if I can have a quick yes, you're good with going dark, that voice vote.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Council. And then, John, I know you have an update on North Avenue.
Before I get to North Avenue, just real quick, thank you for the direction earlier on the options that we're going to choose from. Just understand the project that we're going to bring before you coming in a couple weeks here will be probably a slurry-type project. We won't see that work actually go out until probably next spring for construction, just because you can't slurry during the wintertime. It's too cold. You have to do it during the warmer months. So we'll bring those projects back, but you probably won't see them go out right away. We'll have to wait till warmer weather. Just wanted to
let you know about that. So we weren't expecting to see something right away. We'll have to wait a little bit. On North Avenue, just to give you an update, we are going to be closing the intersection down of Frankwood and North probably for about 7 days, starting, I believe, next Monday. We're doing that because they're going to start doing the road work. They're going to start grinding out the pavement, and we expect the pavement to be done and completed by August 9th. So it will be before school starts. That's the current schedule for the contractor that we have right now. And so there might be a little work still going on when school starts, a little bit of striping here and there, but the pavement will be done, the roadway will be open before school starts.
Good. North, so. That worked out really well.
I'd like to make a comment and give you a pat in the back. That signal light on 11th and I, people are really interested. I mean, they're really happy with that thing, because whenever you have any an open where there's no vehicles, it changes real quick. Yeah. So you don't have to wait for this light, or either green or red, that just keeps lasting for quite some time. Yeah. And it helps the traffic move quite well.
Yeah. Inductor loops are the way to go. It's really a way to help.
It's really, really nice.
Signal to be efficient, and yeah.
Yeah, so.
Thank you.
All right.
Any other updates? All right, I think that's all from staff, Mayor.
Okay. So we'll go into closed session, and I'll turn it over to our attorney.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. One item on this evening's closed session, pursuant to Government Code Section 54954.6, I believe. It's not listed on the agenda, but it's a conference with real property negotiator. APN is as listed, 363-482-15T. Negotiating party is Habitat for Humanity.
Okay, thank you. Okay.